Grace Point, welcome, welcome. Stand with us. Sing with us. Laugh with us. Dance with us.
You're the soul who understands the scars that made me who I am. Through the drifting sands of time, I got your back, you got mine.
If you bear a heavy load,
thick and thin, for love and loss until the end. Oh, you carried me with you, from the highest of the peaks to the darkness of the moon. I was just too blind to see, like a lighthouse in a storm.
So good. Look who we have back. It's our beloved Cassie. And she's actually here for this week and next week. So we get to see her. We're so glad that she's with us. We're glad that all of you have joined us too at Grace Point. We love that you're here. We hope that you feel safe and seen and loved exactly how you are. We're going to sing some songs. We've got a good message from Josh today. But again, we're so glad that you've joined us. Sing with us.
See the morning coming in your eyes. Jubilee, jubilee. It's shining brighter than the sun in the sky. Jubilee, jubilee. Yeah.
Jubilee,
jubilee,
jubilee.
You're the kind of joy that I need. Shining brighter than the sun in the sky. Jubilee, Jubilee.
Oh, yeah. Come on, let's sing it, Jubilee.
Oh, Jubilee.
Well, I hear you singing. You sound good. You look beautiful. We're so glad that you're here. What we'd love for you to do now is make some friends. Talk to each other. Have conversation. We'll be back in a couple minutes. We love you.
Grace Point. Hi, Lee. How are you? I know, you guys are so excited today. My name is Emily Wire, and I am the Director of Operations here at Grace Point, and I just have a couple of announcements for you. First, if you are new, which I see a lot of new faces today, then if you scan the QR code that is on the screen, then you can get a link tree of everything that we'll be talking about, and you can also sign up for our weekly newsletter through the connection card. Our two announcements are that Common Ground, which is our social group for like 30, 40s-ish, meets today after church at Smoke and Thighs, which is right around the corner, after our second gathering. And then Salt and Pepper, which is our social for 40, 50-ish, whatever, meets at the Wedge, which is right on the other side of this wall after this gathering. Even if you don't fall into those two categories per se, if you want to come have lunch with someone, pick a group. They're both great. Love them both. Grace Point's goal is to create a safe, affirming, and transformative community. If you would like to support us in our endeavor to reshape what Christianity and what faith looks like, then you can do so in multiple ways. You can text any dollar amount to 84321. You can go to gracepoint.net/give, scan the QR code and tap the give button, or you can Venmo us, and just don't forget, we have an E on the end of Grace Point. Thanks.
Thank you, Emily. I know y'all just sat down, but I am going to invite you, if you're willing and able, to stand back up with us and help us sing this beautiful song by a group doing amazing things in the world, putting beautiful music, the Common Hymnal. I don't know if y'all are too familiar, but this is a song that is a Grace Point favorite called The Kingdom Is Yours.
Blessed are the ones who do not bury all the broken pieces of their heart. Blessed are the tears of all the weary, pouring like the sky of falling stars. Blessed are the wounded ones in mourning, brave enough to show all of their scars. Blessed are the hurts that are not hidden, open to the healing touch of God. The kingdom is yours. The kingdom is yours. Blessed are the ones who walk in kindness, even in the face of great abuse. Blessed are the deeds that go unnoticed, serving with unguarded gratitude. Blessed are the ones who fight for justice, longing for the coming day of peace. Blessed are the ones who thirst for righteousness, welcoming the last, the lost, the least. Come on, sing it out. The kingdom is yours. Hope will be restored. come and sing it again. The kingdom is yours. The kingdom is yours. Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. The kingdom is yours. Hold on a little more. This is not the end. Hope will be restored. Peace will come. Blessed are the ones who suffer violence, still have strength to love their enemies. Yeah. Blessed is the faith of those who persevere, though they fall, they'll never know defeat. The kingdom is yours.
Grace Point. It is so good to see you. I just love that song, and I especially love it today because Cassie's here, and we're so glad to see her. And we get next week too. Wow. Didn't know that going in. It's even more exciting. My goodness. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Good. I asked that at 9 o'clock and just got stares. So I don't know. You all are a little bit ahead of the game. So a quick announcement before we jump in. Today, right after this gathering at the Wedge, which is next door, which you may be able to go through the door on the place there. If not, you have to go around. But if you are interested in leading a Connect group, we're going to start signups for those next week. So today we're going to meet with those who are willing to host or facilitate. You should have gotten emails from me this week if that's you. If you hear that today and you're like, hey, that could be me, we're going to go over there for lunch and just talk through what our hopes are for this and just sort of lay out some common things we can all share in how we lead our groups. So please, if you're interested, go over there for that. If you're interested in doing that but you can't go over, just see me after the gathering and make sure I have your info, and then I'll update you this week. So usually, we just finished a series last week on the Gospel of Mark that took roughly 18 years. And I like to do series. I like to do generally long series. Most of the time, most of the series I do are 6 to 8 weeks at least. And I just find that it helps people know what to expect. It helps me stay on track with what I'm doing. But one of the things that happens when I'm in the middle of a long series is that other stuff pops up that I think, I'd really like to talk about that. And then I just don't get a chance to talk about it because I've been in a really long series. So we're not jumping into a new series at all this month. I'm just going to share some things that I've been wanting to talk about. And so this week and next week, you'll hear from me. The next week, the 21st of April, you'll hear from our founding pastor, Stan Mitchell. Yep, that's going to be a good time. And then I'll come back at the end of April and sort of wrap up our non-series series. I could tell you were on the same wavelength I was. And so what we're going to do this week, you know, one of the things I've noticed, I think for many of us, and let me just speak for me. If somebody had asked me 30 years ago, what is the point of being Christian? Or what is the point of being a Christian? Or what is the point of going to church? I would have probably said something like this. The point of being a Christian, the point of going to church is to believe in Jesus in the present to avoid hell in the future. And does that sound familiar to anybody else? Like the entire reason I was a Christian was I was going to believe in Jesus now so I could go to heaven and really importantly avoid hell later. That was the, and there was some other stuff that happened. You know, it was really, if I wanted to sum it all up, it would be summed up like this. Believe and behave. Right, believe all the right things as if, how many of you know if you believe all the right things? It troubles me when people are like, yes, I believe all the right things. We don't know that's true, but let's assume you could. Like, believe all the right things and then behave. Act like you're supposed to act. Don't, you know, for me, 30 years ago, that would have meant not using certain words, not ingesting certain substances, going to church every week and pretending I liked it even if I was miserable. You know, being a Christian, like the things you do. And so it was believe and behave. What I didn't realize at the time is that believing and behaving, holding on to certain beliefs and then projecting a certain kind of behavior didn't actually transform me. Like it didn't really do what I was told it would do at the heart level. Like if you just have the right beliefs and if you act the right way, then something will happen inside of you. And really the only thing I got was kind of guilt and shame because there was this tension between the things I'm being told to believe this, but I'm not sure about it. And I'm told to behave this way, but I'm not sure about it. And so it didn't actually do the work it was meant to do because it was primarily, my faith was primarily cosmetic. It was primarily surface. It was primarily about projecting a certain kind of thing. And what I've learned over the years is that transformation, like when we're talking about like actually a core transformation of who we are as people, isn't behavior modification. It isn't primarily about stop or even start. Just doing some things to be perceived a certain way. Transformation is actually the result of interior work. Before it ever is visible on the outside, it's the result of something that's happening in a subterranean level in your heart, in your soul, in your gut, whatever language you want to use for that. But transformation begins there. It's not something you act your way into. It's something that begins inside of you and eventually spills over outside of you. Which also means you don't see it necessarily all that quickly, right? Because it's something happening beneath the surface. A couple examples of what I mean by this. How many of you have ever had in your life or somebody you care about in your life has had a garden before? Okay. I remember when I was a kid, my great-grandmother, there was a little field. It's not even a, calling it a field would be offensive to people who call things fields. But we called it the bottom. It was just this little stretch of land, and she would have a garden in it sometimes when I was a little kid. And my one memory is a copperhead crawling through there, and then I was no longer allowed to go in the garden, right? So I was scared of gardens as a kid because snakes. As I got older, though, and moved away from coal, I'm from coal country, I'm from Appalachia, not a lot of people had gardens because it's hard to have a garden that's like this on the side of a hill. And I went to flatter land and people had things like gardens. And one of the interesting things when Carla and I finally, you know, moved into our first house that was ours or ours in the banks, and we got one of those box gardens, you know what I'm talking about? You build to pretend like you have a garden and you fill it full of dirt and you plant things in it. It was just, And she grew up around all that. So I know she had to think I was just an idiot. But I would go out, like we would plant stuff, and I would go outside every day and just be completely flabbergasted that something was happening with it. Right? You put a seed in the ground, you water it, the sun does what the sun does, and then in a couple days, this thing that was just a seed, and you put it in the ground and you can't see it anymore. It's not even there. It's like hide and seek with a seed. And you go out and suddenly there's this little thing poking through. It's a sprout. And before long, it's shooting up. And then before long, you have a zucchini and squash plant that has taken over everything. Like all you wanted was enough to bring in the house. And suddenly, and you don't see one for a couple days. And then you have to have three neighbors come help you carry it off. Because it just, like once it starts, it really goes. But it begins under the surface. And if you were to just walk, plant your garden one day and walk by it the next day, you may look at it and say, this is a failure. Because I don't see anything going on. But really, if you get on YouTube and watch a time-lapse video of a seed where you can see what it's doing, it's actually doing stuff. And sometimes usually before it grows up, it grows down. And it actually grows roots. And it's the roots that enable the plant to then grow up. And for so many of us, we were given a Christian faith that did not teach us how to grow roots. It just expected us to grow tall. And the reality is it's the root system that actually makes this whole life thing for a plant possible. And I think it's what enables transformation to become a reality for us, is tending to the roots and allowing what's happening underground to happen so that then whatever happens above ground can. Another example. It just happened the other day that I happened to look at my 14-year-old, almost 15-year-old, and realize that he is taller than so many people now. He's taller than my wife. He's taller than grandparents. He's taller than people who have previously been taller. He's not taller than me, but he's taller than people. That's a point of contention in our house. But he's taller than a lot of people around him. Like he's turning into, and I just get on my phone and flip back and look at pictures of the day he was born, and he was just tiny. I was scared to death of him because I just knew I was going to break him. You know what I mean? Like that sort of tiny, and it seems like overnight, he's just sort of grown into this tall person, but I didn't notice it. Like, it was just the other day when I looked at him, and I was like, whoa, you're not a little kid anymore. You're like, you're big. Look at you. And this happens with my kids every time I go somewhere without them. I'll go on a trip for a couple days. I'm only gone a couple days, and I'll come home, and it seems like their vocabulary has grown. Their personalities are even more personality-able. You know what I mean? Like, they're different. And really, the reality is they haven't changed that much, but it's when you're right up against something, you don't realize that right in front of you, they're growing. And they're not just growing up, but they're also growing mentally, and they're growing emotionally and socially. There's all this interior work that's happening as they grow up physically. There's interior work that's happening in them that's helping them become more mature, right? Not so mature that they won't smack each other, but more mature. And I bet if I, from the time they were born, just had a camera on them and time-lapsed the whole thing, it would just be so cool to see them. But that actually happened. I just didn't notice it because it happened right in front of my face. The interior work is what makes all the rest of everything actually work. But I think it's important to note that there is a difference in change and growth, right? Change is inevitable. You're going to change whether you want to change, whether you like change. How many of you love change? Okay. How many of you absolutely hate change and you're mad I'm talking about it? Just throw a hand up. Okay. We've got some change haters. Here's the bad news. The bad news is, regardless of what we do, to be a living being in the world means change. Even though I'm done growing tall, I'm changing every single day. The Greek philosopher Heraclitus said you can never step in the same river twice. And when I first heard that in high school or college, I thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard until I realized it's exactly right. Because you can go to the Mississippi River, you can put your foot in the Mississippi River 100 times and you'll be in 100 different rivers. Continuity, because it has the same name, but that water is gone. And that's a brand new river. Every single day, that's sort of us. right? We change. We're in a constant state, a constant flux. That's just what it means to be human. But there is a big difference between change, which happens whether you intend it, whether you like it, whether you want it. It's just the fact. There's a big difference in change and growth, right? Because to grow implies some other things are going on, right? You plant a seed, you water it, it blooms, it does a thing, it grows up. You're watching something, it's changing, but it's changing in a really specific, intentional way. Now, sometimes things may happen and you didn't intend them, right? And it still helped you grow. How many of you have ever made a mistake and you learned something from that mistake and it helped change your life in really meaningful ways? And you would say, you know, I wouldn't go back and change it. But I bet, actually, if you could avoid that mistake in the future and still learn the same lesson, you probably would, right? I mean, so sometimes you can accidentally learn and grow, absolutely. But change is not the same thing as growth. Growth is what happens when there's been some intention applied to it, because transformation is the result of intentional interior work. One of the things I'm more convinced of than ever is that becoming certain kinds of people, becoming more generous, more compassionate, more loving, all of those things, it takes intentional work. Yes, you may accidentally be generous sometime. That's not what I'm talking about. But becoming that kind of person is an intentional process. And throughout the scripture, there are these, I mean, Jesus loved an agricultural metaphor, right? Partly because that's where he's from. He's from an agricultural area. But I think partly because it sort of encapsulates and captures a reality that we know to be true as human beings. He actually, in Mark, we just finished the Gospel of Mark. In Mark chapter 4, he tells a story, and it's known as the parable of the sower, where he talks about the kingdom of God. And the kingdom of God, as we talked about in that series on Mark, you know, you can also say the dream of God, how God would run the world, like God's vision for the world. That the kingdom of God is like a seed that is sown on different kinds of soil. And there's soil that is shallow and soil that is rocky and soil that is, and then there's soil that is good. And when the seed lands on the good soil, it produces, right? I mean, sometimes soil is just good, but often soil takes a little work, right? It takes some tilling up. It takes some preparation. Like how you get good soil is not always just like, well, wouldn't you know, look at that. That happens to just be good soil. Sure, but even good soil needs work. It needs collaboration and it needs partnership. In John 12, Jesus says this, "Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." Right? There's this image of a seed, of something being buried in the ground, right? Something essentially counterintuitive, like this is being buried. It's like death in some way. But from this death, life begins to emerge. How many of you have ever been around a compost heap? It's counterintuitive, isn't it? Let's take all the dying stuff and use it to be the engine of new life. It's what is called the Paschal Mystery. Right, and it's not just bound up in Judaism, and it's not just bound up in Christianity, but it's this like human understanding that somehow death becomes the engine of life. That something being buried, if tended in the right way, can actually bloom and grow and become life-giving. Paul uses this same metaphor. And if you, I don't know if you spent a lot of time in 1 Corinthians, but first the Corinthians were kind of a mess. They had a lot of division and a lot of problems going on in their community. One of the problems they had is they were arguing over who was the best preacher. And in the community, they just couldn't get along because they were all arguing like, my preacher is better than your preacher. And so you had some of them who were saying, you know, when Apollos gets up and talks, it is so powerful. He's such an orator. It's just brilliant and moving. And I love to hear from Apollos. And then somebody else was going, yeah, but what about Paul? Paul's that tell it like it is. It's not super polished, but wow, he really knows how to bring it. And then there's somebody else in the room who's going, well, I really just like to hear Jesus talk. That's there's been a Jesus juke since the beginning, y'all. Somebody did the first one, and it's caught on ever since. And I don't know how you like to hear Jesus talk in the 50s, because he'd been gone for a while then, but somebody's like, I just want to hear Jesus. And Paul comes along, and he says, look, these divisions are not only ripping your community apart, but they're really, really silly, because, and then he says this, what then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. Paul describes transformation using this seed imagery. Like somebody came along and planted a seed, and then somebody else came along and watered the seed. But ultimately, it was God, it was the soil, creation, all of it working together that produced a plant, that produced something that could bloom and provide goodness, nourishment, and all that stuff. At the core of our tradition, at the core of the human experience, is this sort of understanding that if we want to become certain kinds of people, then really it's not about figuring out the right mask to wear, the right facade to put on, but it's actually this interior work of tending the soil, of planting good seeds, and of watering them and putting them in the right sun and weather conditions to produce a bountiful harvest. So I want to think about that. Like, if the point of faith is not to get a ticket for the afterlife, and that no longer works for me at all. If the point of faith is to become certain kinds of people, if it's to be transformed, how does that happen? How do we experience transformation? And I found that asking questions is one of the best ways to get somewhere, because curiosity is your friend. And too often, we've looked for statements with periods or exclamation points when maybe the most powerful statements of faith have question marks at the end of them. So just a few questions. I think one of the most important questions we can ask on this journey toward transformation, and it's a question that I really, to be honest with you, don't think about asking on a regular basis. What kind of people do we want to become? Do you think about that on a regular basis? Like what kind? You know what I think about on a regular basis? Survival. I just want to be alive and not in jail at the end of the day. Like that. If I can do those things, then it's been a good day. But really, like, what if we stopped? And our first question is, who do I want to be? What kind of values do I want to have? And again, you might accidentally skip and fall into certain things and certain ways of being and certain ways of growing. But the reality is, intention creates way more opportunity for us to become the kind of people we want to become in the world. So that first question is, what kind of people do we want to become? I bet there's not a lot of people who would wake up and say, you ever watched a movie where there's a really good villain? I want to be that. There may be a handful of people, but I think most people don't wake up and say, I just want to become kind of selfish, stingy, mean-spirited, hateful. I want to try to harm as many people as possible. I don't think we wake up that way in most mornings. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I don't. I think one of the ways that we fall into those sorts of things, like stinginess and greed and hatefulness, is by maybe not asking the question and thinking through who do I want to be and how do I get there? What kind of values do I want to shape and mark my life? Another question, once I sort of this idea of who I want to become, what are the practices that can help us get there? Right. So I want to be this generous, kind, compassionate person. What steps can I take and what things can I do that help me become that kind of person, help me get to that kind of person? Which maybe we should ask more questions like, what is it that opens your heart? What makes your heart feel more expansive? Do you know what that feels like? What is it that takes you to that Grinch level of heart size? Like that expands from 1 to 3 sizes. What is it that does that? Here's the thing. I bet some of you are here right now in church because there's something about gathering in a room full of people and singing songs and talking about things that matter that somehow open your heart a bit and allow you to be more engaged and allow you to grow in beautiful ways that you want to grow. This is a progressive church. You're not here because you're afraid of what's going to happen if you don't come, right? Like you're not going to get, if you skip church, you're not going to get a flat tire. And if you do, it's not because God's like, they missed last week, flat tire for them. It's a terrible, terrible coincidence. But we keep showing up week after week. We keep doing this together. And I'm sure it's not because we can't think of anything else to do with our time. I mean, we've all heard of brunch. Why is it that we keep showing up? I think, for me, it's because there's something about this, being in a space with other people, talking about things that matter, welcoming one another, singing together. It's like, why do people go to concerts? Do you ever go to a concert and just think, I am not going to sing and I'm not going to enjoy this? No, you go. One of the reasons I go to concerts is because there are certain artists who can take 70,000 people who would be in a fist fight in the parking lot and bring them together somehow to have an experience that I can only describe like when we were singing Friends in Low Places, my heart just went. You know what I'm talking about, right? It does it. That's why you're here. That's why we keep doing this. That's why we keep coming back. What else opens your heart? Maybe it's being with certain people. I mean, this is one of the reasons we're starting connect groups and hope you'll consider joining one so that we can regularly get together with a group of people and hear stories and share stories. And something about that experience happens every time. Last week, we had a visitor here for Easter, and she took 5 minutes to share a story with me. And when she was done, I could literally feel my heart expanding. That's why we do it. That's why we have relationships. That's why we gather in communities or in smaller communities. That's why we go to lunch. That's why we go to coffee. It opens our hearts. Hearing stories, sharing humanness opens us up in some sort of profound, beautiful way. Maybe for you, it's a sunrise. And you get up obscenely early just to see the colors in the sky and just to be a part of creation as it's waking up. And something about that starts you off. Or maybe I like sunsets because they happen later. And so maybe for you, it's a sunset. And so you sit there with a coffee or a glass of wine and you're watching the sun as it begins to sink down and the sky's orange and it's red and pink. And there's just something about that that you take a deep breath and you can feel yourself becoming more open to the world, more open to yourself, and I bet somehow more open to whatever this mystery we call God actually is. I think it's happening. For me, one of the places almost always is by the ocean, and that's where I spent the last week. So my heart is like, there's something about, you know, like for me, it's in my brain, I think life came from the ocean. Like that's what scientists tell us. Like all this stuff began in the water. And there's something about being on the beach, toes in the sand, listening to the water come in and watching the rhythm that is baked into creation, this ebb and flow of the water, and listening to my kids laugh and chase seagull. My oldest daughter was convinced this was the year she would catch a seagull. And every time, it was a very Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner sort of said she's setting traps. You know, it was great to watch. She didn't get one, but my gosh, she got close and we were nervous. And asked her, what are you going to do if you catch the seagull? She's like, then I'll have a seagull. Okay, great, good for you. But something about in that chair, toes in the sand, listening to the waves come and go, the sound of my kids, and there was just something about it that I could take a deep breath and I could feel myself opening up to possibility and to potential. Some people may call that rest. And maybe for some of us, we're so busy and we're so burning the candle at both ends that if we take five, there'll be this temptation to feel guilty about it. But then when you realize everything in creation needs a break, you can feel yourself resting and being put back together, and something about that then opens you up in new ways. What is it that opens your heart? Here's another question. What is it that challenges you? Because I think growth often comes through being challenged. What is it that challenges you? What is it that causes you to think more deeply? Maybe it's a person or a group of people, and they challenge you. But what if that challenge is ultimately about trying to open you up and shape you in new and interesting ways? I had a friend who years ago, and we were sort of that point counterpoint to each other. And I remember one time we were doing this thing on hell, and I was doing the whole part like it's not real. And he was doing the, oh, it is. And he said, he actually said to me, he's like, if there is not a heaven to gain and a hell to avoid, you wouldn't want to know me. I was like, I don't know that I want to know you now. But I definitely think hell's real for you. You should definitely, whatever keeps you from being a serial killer, man, that is what you need to believe in. But that relationship for me was actually really, really, because it was kind and generous and respectful, that challenge was really helpful for me. Or maybe it's not even a person. Maybe it's a challenging situation or circumstances. Or maybe it's just pressing and testing and pushing yourself to new experiences and new opportunities that maybe you would never have tried before. Maybe it's risking, I don't know, something, whatever that is for you. And then what is it that really inspires you? What is it that gets your creative juices flowing? Because in my mind, whatever growth is and whatever transformation is, there is a creative aspect to that. What I've found in my life is that the times when I'm growing the most, I'm probably also engaged in some sort of creative act the most. And so whatever that is, maybe for you it's journaling. Is anybody like me, you buy untold amounts of journals and never write in them? Just never. Anybody else want to just own that with me? But for some people, their journal is their, it is like a direct line to their growth, because for them, they're getting it all out. Maybe for you, it's creating something. Maybe it's painting, dancing, singing, butter sculpture. I don't know. It takes all kinds, because without you, the butter sculptors, where would we be when we're planning an event and need something carved out of butter? Thank you for your service. What is it that creates awareness in us? Because it's very easy to go through life completely unaware, isn't it? I love this story, and I have no idea. Even the people who have written about this story will say, we don't know if this is a true story. No, this may not be a true story, but it involves the Swiss theologian Karl Barth. Anybody know Karl Barth? He was a Swiss theologian in the 60s, and he lived in Switzerland. And he was riding on a trolley, right, public transportation, and this guy gets on. He's a visitor from the U.S., and he gets on, and he sits down next to Karl Barth, and they strike up this conversation, and like, oh, are you visiting? Yeah. Where are you visiting from? You live here? Yeah, I live here. And he says, well, since you live here, I just thought I'd ask, do you by any chance know Karl Barth? And Barth looks at the guy and says, know him? I shave his face every morning. And then the guy gets so excited, then his stop comes, he gets off the trolley, and he goes and tells everybody he meets that, you won't believe it, this morning on the trolley, I met Karl Barth's barber. It's like not getting the point, right? Because you're not aware. And awareness, what is it that opens your awareness up? What is it that causes you to be present? There's a great story in the Hebrew scriptures of Jacob where he's on the run. He's stolen his brother's birthright. His brother Esau wants to kill him. And he's on the run to his uncle's house to find some cover. And on the journey, he falls asleep and he has this vision of a stairway stretching to the heavens. And after he wrote a song about it, he wakes up and he has this great line. The Lord was in this place and I wasn't aware. What he doesn't say is, I just was here hanging out and God showed up. Which is kind of the language we tend to use. God showed up. Like, what happened? Church today, God showed up, finally. Right? I was in the DMV line today, and God showed up. I don't know what that would look like. God showed up. No. Jacob has the right intuition. This has all been going on everywhere, and I just checked in. It's Moses. The rabbis would discuss and debate. Did the bush suddenly catch fire for Moses, or is the bush always burning? And Moses had been by it how many times? Elizabeth Barrett Browning has this great poem where, this is a paraphrase, but she says, every bush is on fire, but only those who see it will see it, right? That's totally not what she says, but it's the gist. So what is it that creates awareness in you? What is it that keeps you from sleepwalking? What is it that helps you check into the moment? Not the future, not the past, but here. I think that's part, figuring that out is part of our transformation journey. What makes you feel alive? What builds the muscles of gratitude, generosity, and compassion? Because I have come to realize those kind of things are muscles. The more you build them, the bigger they grow. You exercise your gratitude muscle enough, you will become the Arnold Schwarzenegger of gratitude. But if you ignore it and you don't exercise it, that muscle can atrophy. And so what are we doing that helps build the muscles of the kind of things we want to incorporate and have become part of the core of who we are? Because I don't know about you, I want to be a more grateful person moving forward than I am right now or than I have been. I want to be a more generous person even moving forward than I am right now or I have been. I want to be a more compassionate person because I have this deep conviction that that's the reality we call God. That's what God is like. And again, people keep saying, but what if you're wrong? I'm just convinced that if I am wrong, and I'm wrong about a lot of stuff, I don't know what it is or I'd fix it. But the things I'm wrong about, it's not because I've gone too far and that I've wagered that God is too loving, too compassionate. It's not that somehow I am suddenly more compassionate than God. It is that we still haven't caught up to where this reality called God is inviting us to go. So what is it that exercises the muscles of the values that matter to us? What is it that helps us do those sorts of things? And then I did this at 9, and I think I have some time to do it here too, but real quick, does anybody else, we just have a what at the bottom. Does anybody have an idea? Is there a practice for you that helps you, what the kids say nowadays is a lock in? Is there something that helps you transform? Is there some question, some practice, something that anybody wants to share? It's not, you don't have to share, by the way. You don't feel like you're put on the spot. Yes. Okay. What helps you become present and safe in your body?
So for me personally, that's I start off my day in, I'm a water baby, and so I start off the day in the hot tub, and so I have sensory processing issues, and so for me to have a unison experience in my body, all feeling the same sensation, helps me get present when the rest of the day I'm normally experiencing as an empath all the sensory experiences outside me. Helps me stop and focus on what's going on inside. So the question is, what's really going on inside? What's going on inside my body? How am I being safe and present?
Yeah.
And saying, no, I am safe. And then start listening to, oh, where do I notice tightness? Where do I notice pain? Where do I notice tension?
Yeah.
Are those emotional experiences that I haven't processed yet?
Yeah.
Are those emotional experiences that I want to continue to process? And so I can kind of double tap or double-click belonging, or love, or joy, and focus on the experiences I do want to have present in my body.
Yeah. So paying attention to what's going on inside of you. Anybody else raised in a religious tradition that kind of told you to do the exact opposite of that? And so, like, we're born, and then we enter a religion that is trying to divorce us from our body, and divorce us from our experience, and divorce us from our feelings, and divorce us from all of that, just sort of disconnect us. When the whole idea of religion is about, should be about reconnecting us, not with some bigger, with ourselves. It's about coming home. Yeah, so good. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
I do two more squats. It reminds me that even when I'm feeling challenged or small or incapable or I'm doubting myself, that I can do hard things.
Yes.
Like the world is a scary place right now, so we can often feel like victims or like helpless, and what can we really do? So doing those things that empower us.
So good. Doing things that empower us and remind us, I'm repeating it for the online folks, and remind us of our capacity that we can do hard, difficult things. Yes?
Opening up and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that helps me grow, but also it usually invites the other person to say things, so it causes connection.
Yeah, opening up and being vulnerable. And you're exactly right. That ends up being a two-way street. I've been a pastor for like 27 years or something like that now. And I can tell you that the pastoral care side of my work when people come and they share their lives, it actually, it does not have a neutral effect. Right? There's something about that is transformative, being able to walk through with, both giving and receiving vulnerability. Anybody else? Murph.
What ideas, big ideas, do I have certainty about and should I question
that? What big ideas do I have certainty about and should I question that? Yeah. You know what I think is an interesting exercise for that is, I've had folks do this over the years and I've done it and it's really interesting, is to get a Sharpie and a pencil and write down right now what ideas, beliefs, whatever you have that you think are in Sharpie that are like, I'm on it. This is not changing. And then what ones would be in pencil? And regularly do that over the years. And what I've found in my own experience is there's far less Sharpie than there was in the beginning and way more erase marks. What is it, that I'm holding on to, sort of that whole certainty vibe? Yeah. Anybody else? Yes.
What gives you peace?
Yeah, what is it that gives you peace? And practices like prayer, for those of you that prayer is an important part of that. There are lots of things that can help cultivate that sense of peace. Beautiful. Anybody else?
I was going to say therapy. Yeah. Several
of these, but having
a safe space to ask questions or to just vent.
Yep. Yeah, therapy. Yeah. So important. Anybody else? What do all these things we're talking about have in common? I think it's that at somewhere in all of them, there's a verb. And that ultimately transformation, I love to think, I try to do it at least once a day, not to brag. But thinking is important. I love thinking. I love processing big ideas. I love all of that. But the journey of transformation at some point, and yes, it involves thinking, but it also involves verbs. It involves action, right? It involves watering the seed that has been planted. And it's also not just a one-time thing you do, like, well, I watered the seed and now it's grown and I'm done for like the rest of my life. It's this, just like there are seasons and there are planting seasons and different things are planted in different seasons. Our lives, the journey of transformation is this regular process of having good things planted in the soil and then tending them and caring for them as they grow up. And then we're like, oh gosh, I've really done a lot of work in this particular area and I feel like I'm a different person now and I'm becoming more the person that when I ask the question, what kind of person do I want to be? I'm on the journey there, but over here, I sense this is my next area of growth. And so now I'm going to come over here and I'm going to tend that seed and I'm going to, does that make sense? So it's ultimately not just about thinking, although thinking's a part of it. It is also about acting and doing the things, engaging in the practices and engaging in the steps that actually create and tend and make blooming possible for all of us. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Let's pray. God, may we cultivate a sense and a vision of the kind of people we want to be, moving more and more towards love and generosity and compassion and goodness. May we have that vision. And then may we have wisdom and courage as we take the steps that will enable us and empower us to experience the transformation we're looking for. We trust that all the seeds we need are already planted in the soil. It's already all in there. So may we do our part to tend it, to water it, to cultivate it so that we can become the people we long to become, because the world needs people who are fully and beautifully alive. And may that be our story. We offer this in gratitude and in the name of Jesus. And everybody said, amen.
When all your hopes are shattered and you feel like your soul is at sea, your dreams don't seem to matter, your heart is bruised and battered, but you can't feel anything. Love anyway, love anyway. When your world has gone to hell, no story left to tell.
I've been a long lost pilgrim, built my home on fragile faith, been the victim and the villain, still the father to my children, owner of a heart that slowly changed.
We love you, Grace White. Thank you for being with us today. We hope you have a good week. Enjoy this beautiful spring weather. We'll see you back next week. We love you.